Avos Perik Aleph Mishnah Vav 1-6, and now we meet the next two of the Zugos, the second pair, Yoshub and Prachya Nitehar Bailey. The timing of the leadership of these men seems to be near the end of the second century of the Common Era, meaning either during the time of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, that's John Hyrcanus, who's 134 to 104 BCE, or his son Alexander Yanai Amelech, who was from 103 to 76 BCE. The reason we know that is because we talk about how the Gemara talks about how Yoshub and Prachya had to flee as one of the Pharisees of Prushi from persecution, and he's only able to come back later on when it was safe. It's not exactly clear if that was during the big civil war that happened in like around 80 BCE or before that. Yochanan Kohen Gadol really is a complicated figure, but he ended up turning against the Prushim later in life. Whatever the case is, that does mean that we have quite a big gap between the first period of Zukos, who are living around the time of Antiochus and the Hanukkah story, call that like 160s and 170s BCE, and here now closer to 125 or maybe even later BCE. Whatever the case is, here we have Yoshub and Prachya, who says three things. This is a very famous Mishnah as well, I think. The first is, he says, Yoshub Prachya Omer, Aselecha Rav, you should make for yourself a Rav, a teacher. Now, the Rambam understands the fact that it says Asay, which means to appoint, to make for yourself a Rav, as opposed to me learn from a Rav, is that you should choose someone to be your, I'll call him halachic advisor, the person who keeps you on the straight and narrow, even if he isn't necessarily worthy for the job. In other words, you need to have a Rav, to have someone who's independent and objective outside of yourself, to keep an eye on you, to advise you, to counsel you, even if, for argument's sake, you are the more learned and greater person than he. Even so, you need to have someone else. The same kind of way every professional sports athlete has a coach. The athlete, of course, is better than the coach in normal circumstances, certainly if they're great athletes. But yet, the coach is someone who stands from the side and looks objectively on and can sort of give counsel on how to improve. So that's number one. The other approach is the approach of the Bar Tanura. They go hand in hand, but the Bar Tanura here is understanding this in the context of having a Rav who will convey the Mesorah to you. So the Torah Shebaal Peh, in the time of this Mishnah, certainly is only oral, and therefore you need to have a teacher who's going to teach it to you. And the advice here is that you should have one single Rav, master, teacher, who conveys the Mesorah to you, so you get a single coherent, cohesive transmission. Because if you have multiple teachers teaching you piecemeal, so then different versions, variations of how they express the ideas could seem to be potentially in conflict, and therefore it's hard to resolve them, which makes a lack of clarity. And you want clarity in terms of receiving the Mesorah, and therefore only one Rav will do. Now, the Bar Tanura points out, there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Tes, which says that when it comes to Svara, you're ill-advised to choose just one Rav. You want to have multiple Rebbeim, because Svara, which means like logic, perspective, understanding how the underlying mechanics of something is, the whys of something, W-H-Y, whys of something, with different perspectives, you gain additional insight, and therefore more perspectives and more ways of looking at something, the better. But that's in terms of Svara, of thinking about how and why things are the way they are. But to actually get the raw material, to get the big picture of the Mesorah, one Rav is much better because of it being a sort of a single, cohesive and coherent message. Nowadays, of course, we don't really have a Mesorah in that same way. And therefore, if you learn like the Bar Tanura, this mandate would be sort of less applicable nowadays. But certainly, if you learn like the Rambam, you certainly should have one rabbi who is your go-to rabbi, who you trust to advise you and you'll listen to, and essentially, submit to if he's advising you that you need to, you'll have to choose who it's going to be. But once you've chosen him, you should follow his directives and his guidance. That's the first of the three things. The second thing is ukene lecha chaver. Aside from having someone, so to speak, I'll call it above you, you have to have someone who is your contemporary, your equal, and that should be your chaver. Chaver means a friend. Here it's singular, so one friend is what you need, minimally, but one. The word chaver literally comes from the word like lechaber, is to attach things. So someone who's attached to you, a chibur is an attachment. Okay, he's with you. He's with you in spirit. He empathizes with you. He sympathizes with you. He understands where you're coming from. He understands what hurts you. He is connected to you. And even if he's not with you physically in person, he is connected to you in spirit. And the word kane, a kinyan, is really a halachic term of art, and it means to acquire something, like acquire rights, to purchase something. So a kinyan means that you have to have a formally acquire, earn the rights to have this person be your friend, which means the bartender speaks out, even if it would take, hypothetically, paying him to be your friend, you should do it, because having a friend is so important. Now, the usual price you have to pay isn't with money or with gifts, but with reciprocity, meaning you're going to be his chaver and he's going to be your chaver, and that's the price you pay. Now, as far as what makes for a chaver, so we're not talking about, you know, I remember I'm echoing in my ears my son telling me when he's a teenager how many friends he has, and me trying to tell him that I'll be lucky if I had one. So the chaver here isn't sort of a friend of circumstances. It's not a, you know, someone who you're friendly with, an acquaintance. No, this is someone who really meets two basic essential criteria as far as I can understand. The first is respect, and the second is trust. Let me define those terms for you. Respect here means that A, you share common values, and B, you believe that this other person upholds those values. He lives up to what's expected of someone who espouses those values, so you respect them. And number two, trust. Trust in this context means that you trust that this other person has your best interests at heart. He's not using you as a tool. He's not got a driving agenda that is anything other than what's good for you. And while it's not so difficult to find people who share your values and who you can respect because it uplifts those values, hopefully you live in a good community and the people in your community share your values generally and they're good people there, but also it's someone who you can trust, have your interests at heart, really in sort of an altruistic kind of way, that's really hard to find. And people are basically terrible at altruism. We're hardwired to sort of try to figure out what's in it for us. So it's very difficult to find someone who really has your interest at heart, regardless of what's in it for them. This is a very rare thing. And those who argue that even altruism is impossible, not part of the human capacity, well, that's not true according to Torah Hashkafa, but it is very difficult. But in the context here of a chaver, we don't need to have total altruism, because each of the two chaverim, the two friends, are actually giving someone to the other person, which is reciprocity. I'll be your true friend, and you'll be my true friend. So I'm getting something out of it, but it requires your sincere interest in my well-being and give me the best advice and counsel and support that is for what's best for me, and I'll do the same for you. Now, what is the benefits of the chaver, this coveted friend that we're looking for? So the Rabbeinu Yonah brings three specific things, okay? And I think you'll see how each of them really are predicated on this idea of respect and trust. The first is, I'm going to say a little out of order of his order, but for my purposes, the first is he, your chaver, will be a source of honest, good advice. Again, obviously, that is predicated on A, respect, that you're sharing the same values and you believe that what he's going to counsel you is going to be aligned with what you believe is right and good. And second of all, you trust him that when he's giving you advice, he understands who you are, what's good for you, and your interest is at heart. That's essential because you want someone who you can seek advice from and then rely on their counsel. So that's your chaver, number one. Number two, very important, you have a chaver as someone who will give you criticism that you'll accept. Criticism on how you can develop your character, how you can improve and be a better person. So again, obviously, A, that's predicated on, number one, respect. If you don't share common values and respect this person for his perspective and his, you know, his insights, obviously, why'd you accept what he has to say in terms of critique of your behavior, your shortcomings? And second of all, again, trust. You have to believe that the advice and the counsel, the criticism that you're receiving from this person, you know, where there's room for improvement, is again something that's really you should take seriously because he has your best interests at heart. I'm reminded of a story with my grandfather. Late in his life, he wanted to go traveling by himself. All his children said he couldn't do it. He had been traveling alone all his life, and he was sort of insistent on going, and at the very end, he backed down and said, listen, I'm sure I could do it, but if everyone who I love is telling me that I shouldn't, they must see something that I don't. And that's the idea here. You are looking for advice to rely on someone that they must see something you don't if they're telling you something that you don't, you weren't expecting to hear, or they tell you you're falling short in some way. You would rely on a counsel, but you have to, of course, respect and trust them. And the third thing the bartender says is that your chaver is your study partner, your chavrusa. Now, a study partner, your chavrusa, someone you can learn with. So the chavrusa really provides two benefits, as he describes it, what I'll call the sur meira and the ase tov, the avoiding the bad stuff and doing something good. So the obvious ase tov, the good thing is that by simply having a chavrusa, that forces you to actually put your nose in the book and start learning, because you're study partners. In other words, if you have a meeting, you're going to meet after dinner Friday night at 10 o'clock, back in the shul to learn together. Since he's there, you have to go there too, so it forces you to be there. Similarly, if you're learning whatever you're learning with him, so when you get off track, then he'll bring you back on the page and so on. So that's the first benefit, called Asay Tov. The Sur Meira, avoiding bad stuff, is very important, because if you're learning on your own, so then it's just inevitable that you'll misread something, misunderstand something, misconstrue something. And if you're by yourself, who's going to call you out on that? Who's going to tell you, no, I don't think that's what it means. I don't think that's what it says. I don't think that's consistent with what we learned elsewhere. So you need someone to bounce ideas off of to make sure that you are understanding correctly. And again, I think this is totally consistent with the respect and trust thing. Just here, it's sort of respect and trust on an intellectual level, meaning you respect the person, you respect their intellect, you respect their ability to think clearly, to reason soundly, to articulate correctly, and so on. And you trust them, again, that they're what they're saying is an expression of their desire to come to the truth, as opposed to their desire to, show you how they're smarter than you or show you that you're wrong and that kind of thing. There's a very famous story, I think it's very famous, in Bava Metzia, Pei Dalet. It says that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were chavrusas for their whole lives. They have a long, complicated story together. And in the end, Reish Lakish dies, also a complicated story. But the point is, Rabbi Yochanan had no chavrusa. He was desperate. And the people in the Beis Midrash, they found this Ben Padas, or sorry, Elazar Ben Padas, to be his chavrusa, because Elazar Ben Padas was a very sharp fellow like Rabbi Yochanan. And whenever Yochanan would say an idea, so then his chavrusa, Elazar Ben Padas, would say, yeah, you're right, I'll show you all the reasons why you're right. And Rabbi Yochanan said, listen, who needs that? When I was learning with Reish Lakish, so everything I said, he'd tell me 10 reasons why I'm wrong. And that was great, because it was something, a sounding board. He, pushed me to clarify my ideas, to check if I'm making a mistake. But you're telling me I'm right, so who needs that? And he was actually, it says he was so desperate, went out of his mind, that they prayed for mercy in his soul, the students, and that he actually died. Rabbi Yochanan died. And sort of taken away, because if you don't have someone who can help you, if your agenda in life is to, get clarity and understand, clarity or death, so if you have someone who's going to help you refine your clarity, Rabbi Yochanan already knew what he knew. He didn't need someone else to tell him what he knew was right. He needed someone to tell him what he thought was right was actually wrong. So without that, there's no point in going on. Certainly that's what you're dedicating your life towards. The other very famous story, even maybe more famous story, in the Gemara on this topic, and I think it's worth actually noting, there are surprisingly few reflections, anecdotes, stories, memras, statements in the rabbinic literature and the Talmud about friendship. It's remarkable how few there is, but there is a very famous one in the Tainus Chav Gimel. There's the story of Choni HaMagel, Choni the Circle Maker, and again, a long, complicated story, a beautiful story, and worth studying. But the point I want to bring out here is that he actually fell asleep for 70 years, like the Jewish Rip Van Winkle. When he woke up, he couldn't really find any contemporaries. He couldn't find people who appreciated him for who he was. And ultimately, he was so distressed that he also heaven had mercy on him, and he died. And Rava, the Amora, says, this is the story of Choni HaMagel, and his distress not having a friend at the end of his life was a fulfillment of this folk saying, O chavrusa, o misusa, give me a friend or give me death, meaning if you have no colleagues who understand where you're coming from and could be in the same place as you are mentally, then its life isn't worth living. That's the memra. It reminds me of what my mother told me that her great grandmother told her when my great great grandmother. She died at 97, and at the end of her life, she had essentially outlived her own children, certainly her siblings and her parents and her friends. And she said to my mother, it's no fun being alive anymore because there's no one who remembers my memories. And I think that's the idea of Choni HaMagel, that there's no common place in terms of context of your life, so then it's no fun being alive anymore. Speaking of grandparents, on this first point of the first earlier point I made about Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish about declare to your death, you want someone who's going to correct you. My grandfather had a great line you can put in your pocket. He said, if two people are always agreeing, at least one of them isn't thinking. And when you want a chavrusa, and as far as a study partner, you want someone where both parties are thinking, pushing each other to get clarity. There's one other point that the Mefarshim speak out about the benefits of having a chaver besides those three Rabbeinu Yonah, and that is you have someone who can rely upon without hesitation. There's always someone there for you at all times. If you would need somebody, you can count on them day or night to be there for you, which is sort of an invaluable and necessary resource that every person really should have, and therefore you should strive to get yourself someone who's like that. And the price you have to pay for the kinyan is reciprocity. You have to be there for them as well. Okay, the third and final part of the Mishnah is v'heved dan es kol ha'adam l'chav schus. Translated sort of figuratively, you should judge everybody favorably. The literal translation of the words, chav schus means like the pan balance side of merit, which is the picture, the literal picture is like those pan balances. You'll think of like, you know, the statue of justice with like the pan balance in her hand. So how they weigh things in the olden days. So the point is, there's two pans, and we're saying tip the scales in the benefit to the side of merit, having a favorable interpretation of ambiguous activity. So now let me make sure this is clear. We could divide people into four categories, that you're, you know, witnessing them do something, and what they're doing seems ambiguous. And one is someone who you know to usually do the right thing. We'll call him the tzaddik. Then you have the beinoni, someone who you just, you know, sometimes yes, sometimes no, doing the right thing. He's, you know, he's got a mixed record. Then you have the rasha, someone who is, like, consistently does the wrong thing. He's known to be sort of fails in this area, and he has a track record of misbehavior. Then the fourth category is someone who you just don't know. Just you have no experience with this person. So therefore you don't know if they're typically well-behaved or typically, you know, doing the wrong thing. Now, the first category, the someone who you know to generally do the right thing, there's an obligation to judge him favorably, not from our Mishnah, but from the Torah itself. So it's a Doraisa obligation, a Torah obligation, based on the Pasuk, B'tzedek tishpot amisecha, with tzedek, hard to translate exactly, I'll call it justice, you should judge your fellow Jew who behaves as a Jew ought to behave. And that idea is that you have an tzedek implies tipping to the side of merit. I can't get to that more now, but the point is that you have to judge favorably. If someone is typically well-behaved, as far as you know, and has done the right thing in the past, so if somebody that does a sort of, his motivations are not clear, you have an obligation midoraisa to judge him fairly and assume he's doing the right thing, okay? Our mission is not that. Our mission is saying, if someone who you don't know, you just don't know, you don't have a track record with him, and what he's doing now is ambiguous, it's open for interpretation, so the advice that Yoshua Parach is giving you is judge him favorably. And there's a Rashi, really, that's based on a Gemara in Masechah Shabbos, that says, it's Shabbos Kuf Chav Zayin 127b, that Rashi says, in the schar, in the merit of you judging this person favorably, so then you will also be judged favorably by heaven. So that's that. Let me speak about the Rasha. If someone who you know has a, you know, checkered past, he's been badly behaved, he's up to no good in this area, or he doesn't live up to his obligations, moral obligations in this area, so you have no obligation to judge him favorably. And to the contrary, it's dangerous. You really should, if you know someone has behaved poorly in the past, you should be afraid he's up to the same shenanigans again, and not be beguiled by him, and be wary. You know, Chochem Eina Barosha, you have to keep your eyes wide open and anticipate that this person is behaving poorly. As far as the Beinoni, the person who, you know, is usually good, you know him, but he has had his moments where he didn't live up to that. So most Rishonim learn that Beinoni is also protected by this B'tzedek Tishpot HaMisecha, meaning Doraisa obligation. As you know, guys, generally a good Jew, he's a nice guy, he's a good guy. You know, sometimes he doesn't do quite the right thing in this particular area, so you should still assume the best of him. That is the Doraisa, according to most. Interestingly, Rabbeinu Yonah understands, on our Mishnah anyways, that our Mishnah is coming to that case as well. So according to Rabbeinu Yonah, at least on the Mishnah is talking about someone who either is a Beinoni, he's, you know, sometimes yes, sometimes no, well-behaved, and not someone who you just don't know. Interestingly enough, Rabbeinu Yonah and Shari Tshuva actually leans like the other Rishonim, saying that you have a mitzvah Doraisa, an obligation, a bedrock obligation, to judge favorably someone who is a Beinoni as well.